O'Brien's dust detector experiment was carried to the moon by Apollo's 11, 12, 14, and 15. Another was destroyed when the Apollo 13 lunar module Aquarius burnt up on re-entry to the Earth's atmosphere. Now, the Apollo 14 dust detector operated from 1971, February the 5th, just after being placed on the moon 50 years ago this week, until 1977, September the 30th. Which gives me the chance to move on to discussing Apollo 14. Apollo 14 was the sixth human mission to the moon and the third one to land. On this evening's The Space Show, we mark the 50th anniversary of Apollo 14. It was launched on 1971, January the 31st, and returned to Earth on February the 9th. The crew were Alan Shepard as commander, Stuart Roosa as command module pilot, and Edgar Mitchell as lunar module pilot. Shepard and Mitchell would land the lunar module Antares in hilly upland north of the Frau Marrow crater. Roosa would remain alone, circling the moon every 2 hours in the command and service module, which was called Kitty Hawk. On the moon, Shepard and Mitchell made two moonwalks lasting 4 hours 48 minutes and 4 hours 35 minutes. They set out a set of experiments, including Brian O'Brien's experiment, and collected 45.5 kilograms of lunar samples. After 33.5 hours on the moon, Antares lifted off and soon rejoined the Kitty Hawk. Having orbited the moon 34 times in 66 hours, Roosa set Kitty Hawk on its return path to Earth. Some 216 hours after leaving Cape Kennedy, they splashed down into the Pacific Ocean, some 1,200 kilometres south of Samoa. In 1998 February, as he sickened with the leukemia that would kill him several months later, Alan Shepard spoke with oral historian Roy Neal about the Apollo 14 mission.
Well, actually, the flight had gone extremely well. We had one or two problems, docking problem earlier, problem with something floating around in the abort switch, which closed, made as if we were pushing the abort switch closed, but all these were taken care of. Now we're on the way down, flying up on our backs like this, with the engine pointing that way, slowing down, getting gradually more steeper and more steeper. We had a ruling that the computer had to be updated by the landing radar. Reason being is that while you're on your back, obviously you can't see the ground, you can't see the mountains, you can't see the rocks or anything. So we had a rule that said, if the landing radar is not updating the computer by the time that you're down at a level of about 13,000 feet, then you have to abort. You have to get out of there. Well, the landing radar wasn't working. And so they called us up and said, your landing radar is not working. We said, thank you very much. We're aware of that. And then a little bit further on, and they said, you know what the ground rule is about aborting if you're not at 13,000 feet. Well, yeah, we knew that. Finally, some bright young man over in the corner said, hey, the landing radar is working, but it's locked up on infinity. Have them pull a switch, reset it, see if it works. So we pulled the circuit breaker, put it back in, and sure enough, the landing radar came in. Shortly after that, we got cleared to land, and it's sort of a, man, that was close kind of routine. As soon as we pitched over, there was beautiful Promaro, just the way I had seen it hundreds of times in the from the scale model. Came on down, made a very, very soft landing. As a matter of fact, soft enough so that even though we landed in a slight crater like this, the uphill leg didn't crush like it's supposed to. We had crushable material on the landing. So, instead of a slight right wing down, perfect landing, shutting off the switches, and Ed Mitchell turned to me and said, Alan, what were you going to do if the landing radar had not been working by 13,000 feet? I looked at him and I said, Ed, you'll never know.
Well, there you were.
I would have gone down.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
That's the truth.
Not have come that far. Well, you see, Ed, for example, had not been in the simulator, landing simulator at all. It was my job to land. And I'd done hundreds of these things. I knew that if I could see the surface, man, I could get down, maybe not exactly where we were supposed to, but I could get down close to it. So.
And so you would have made the landing under any circumstances. You'd have busted a mission rule?
I would have at least been able to take a visual look. I would have pitched over and taken a visual look and then made a decision.
Fair enough. Well, we finally have you on the moon. Mission accomplished, or was it? Tell me about what you and Ed did on the moon as you remember it. What were the highlights?
Well, it's, of course, the first feeling was one of a tremendous sense of accomplishment, I guess, if you will. Tremendous sense of realizing that, hey, not too long ago, I was grounded. Now I'm on the moon. There was that sense of self-satisfaction, I think, immediately. But then that went away because we had a lot of work to do. But I'll never forget that moment. Another moment which I will never forget is after Ed had followed me down and we had set out some of our equipment, taken the emergency samples, we had a few moments to look around, to look up in the black sky, totally black sky, even though the sun is shining on the surface. It's not reflected. There's no diffusion, no reflection. And totally black sky and seeing another planet, planet Earth. Now, planet Earth is only four times as large as the moon. So you can really still put your thumb and your forefinger around it at that distance. So it makes it look beautiful. It makes it look lonely. It makes it look fragile. You think to yourself, just imagine the millions of people that are living on that planet and don't realize how fragile it is. I think this is a feeling everyone has had and expressed it in one fashion or another. But that was an overwhelming feeling in seeing the beauty of the planet on the one hand, but the fragility of it on the other.
Being Alan Shepard, of course, shortly after that golden moment, you decided to play a little golf.
I didn't decide to play a little golf. Oh, that is a long story. I will not tell the whole story.
Well, tell us what you think might be. All right. Because it is a very famous story, and I'm sure a lot of people would like to hear your version of it.
Well, as you know, so far, I'm the only person to have hit a golf ball on the moon. Probably will be for some time. And being a golfer, I was intrigued before the flight by the fact that the ball with the same club head speed will go six times as far. It will, its time of flight, I won't say stay in the air because there's no air, its time of flight will be at least six times as long. It will not curve because there's no atmosphere to make it slice or hook. And I thought, what a neat place to whack a golf ball. Well, when I went to Bob Gilruth to tell him I wanted to hit a couple of golf balls, of course, absolutely no way. And there was a series when I explained that it was not a regular golf club. It was the handle that we used that we pulled out, put a scoop on the end to scoop up samples of dust with. And that was already up there, would be thrown away. Then we had a club head, which I had adapted to snap on this handle, and two golf balls, for which I paid, the two golf balls and the club head, no expense to the taxpayer. Okay. The thing that finally convinced Bob was, I said, "Boss, I'll make a deal with you. If we have screwed up, if we have had equipment failure, anything has gone wrong on the surface, where you are embarrassed or we are embarrassed, I will not do it. I will not be so frivolous. And I want to wait until the very end of the mission, stand in front of the television camera, whack these golf balls with this makeshift club, fold it up, stick it in my pocket, climb up the ladder, close the door, and we're gone." So he finally said, "Okay." And that's the way it happened.
In full view of a huge worldwide audience of millions of people who have never forgotten to this day, Alan Shepard still is perhaps best known as the guy who played golf on the moon.
Well, it was designed to be a fun thing. Fortunately, it is still a fun thing. The club, the makeshift club, is with the U.S. Golf Association in their museum. There has been absolutely no commercialism tried. Well, there's been absolutely no commercialism. One company tried to say it was their golf ball, and we cut them off very quickly. So it's been just a totally fun thing.
And still is.
Yeah.
That was the late Alan Shepard. Former NASA astronaut, he flew on Mercury 3, the first American manned spaceflight, and Apollo 14. And that was recorded by Roy Neal in 1998 at Shepard's home in Pebble Beach, California, just a few months before he died. Also on that mission was Ed Mitchell, who walked on the moon with him. Now, Ed Mitchell died on February the 4th of 2016, aged 85. 2 days later, Stuart Atkinson wrote a tribute to him. It is read for us by Southern FM presenter Judith Vanell.
Another One Falls by Stuart Atkinson. No mournful blare of trumpets, but a forlorn tweet announced another one had gone. Another of the tallest redwoods in the forest of history had fallen, leaving a poorer world behind. One by one they pass, the giants who dared to step off terra, flying through a quarter million miles of deadly night and stride across the moon. On huge TVs in living rooms and schools, we watched them bounce across its ancient plains, snowmen stained by dust as cold and grey as a crematorium ash, mischievous boys with smiles flashing behind visors of burnished gold, as they lolloped along, hopping like drunk kangaroos between boulders, big as cars, so far away from Earth that their words came from the past, and another one has gone. To the children of today, their pale faces bathed not in sunshine, but in the cold turquoise light of tablets and phones. Those Apollo adventures are like Greek myths, ancient history, as far down the raging river of time as Viking raids, Cleopatra's braids or Magellan's voyage across the sea, something seen on documentaries sandwiched between ancient aliens and X-Files repeats. They're heroes and heroines to our shame, our clueless Kardashian Barbies, rappers who believe the earth is flat or worse. Some, their young brains washed in the filthy waters of YouTube, addled by the full caps blogs of idiots, liars and fools, believe we never even went to the moon. It was faked, they whine, staring up at a chemtrail crisscrossed sky, sneering at the crazy idea that there was a time, years before they were born, when humans were smart and brave enough to walk across Luna's frozen lava lakes, to take one giant leap and see Earth shining glorious blue and white in an ebony sky.
Thank you, Judith. Now, Judith Vinell presents that wonderful program on Monday mornings following the 11 o'clock news, and well worth a listen. Now, the Apollo 14 command module pilot, Stu Roosa, died on December the 12th of 1994 at the age of 61.